It is terrible. Let's talk to Chris and find out just how terrible it is. Chris, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. I mean, we have been hearing for the past several weeks and probably months, I suppose, about the new timetables that were brought in, how they were badly introduced, they were badly thought out. Some of them have been revamped. Some train companies have admitted they don't have enough drivers, they haven't trained enough drivers. I mean, why is it all going so horribly wrong?
Yeah, I agree. There's been lots of focus on what's wrong with the rail industry and why it's not been able to cope, and probably not enough focus on what the impact has really been to passengers, not just since May. I mean, there are areas of GTR, as they call it, Great Thames Link Railway, that have had problems going back now for a year or more with shortage of drivers and even strikes amongst guards. Issues that have dragged on, and when you're a regular commuter, you do actually really rely on the service to get you to and from work every day.
Yeah, you do.
You expect it to be on time. You expect, I mean, passengers, particularly commuters, are creatures of habit. Yeah, they'll go to the same bit of platform every day. They'll get on the same coach or the train. They'll probably talk to the same people that have been travelling to their destination for years. They just expect it to happen. And, you know, in the last few years, GTR in particular, and now it's affected some other operators, it's just gone to pot.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you can't rely on the train to get you to work every day and to get you home to a slightly lesser extent, that's important. You know, your life just unravels. You know, the stress levels for people who need to be at work, you know, who have to keep apologising, ringing their boss to say, look, I'm really sorry, but my train's been cancelled, or I couldn't get on the train because it was too busy. You know, there weren't enough carriages. I mean, when are they going to sort this problem out, or these problems?
Of course, the problem is they think by the new timetable they were starting to sort these things out. They are talking about new trains, longer trains, billions of pounds of investment on new infrastructure. You look at what's happened in London at Blackfriars, London Bridge, and the railway in between. It really has been a huge exercise, which again has had its impact on the regular commuters every day, just at work. And obviously the passengers felt that when they got towards the end of the motorworks, things were going to be a lot better, and it'll be worth the pain they've suffered over a few years.
Well, isn't it true that
they don't feel like that?
Isn't it true that a lot of people have actually left their jobs because of this problem? It's like they can't cope with the commuting, so they've actually resigned from their jobs, which is totally changing people's lives.
Certainly, there was talk of that even before on GTR. People travelling up from the Brighton area when there were strikes and trains that they are normally expected to be in by 8 or 9 o'clock, but they weren't getting in to London till 10, half 10. And, the boss doesn't like that. If you're going to turn up late on a regular basis,
absolutely.
It's going to impact on your job.
And some of the train companies, the new timetables to improve the situation have evidently involved, say, cutting rush hour trains from like 20 an hour down to 15 an hour. How is that actually improving a situation?
It's a pretty good question, to be fair.
When we know that the trains in the peak are particularly crowded anyway, trying to reduce it is just ridiculous. And the worry is the industry probably knew. But as I said, I mean, the impact on passengers is the thing that seems to have gone missing in a lot of the discussions. It's all been about who to blame in the rail industry and how quickly they're going to fix it. I mean, they maybe should not have decided to go with this timetable because the impact is so complex.
Is it really a national emergency, do we think?
Well, when you talk about calling a COBRA meeting possibly to talk about the impact on Novichok on a couple of people, I'm sure TSSA probably think, well, this is affecting a lot more than that. It's regional, it's national.
Well, it is. Chris Grayling, after all, was... Chris, I mean, we talk about London an awful lot because that's where we're all based down here at Talk Radio. However, you know, northern trains have had their problems up in the north of England for a very, very longer period in some ways. They now say that the Stockport-Manchester line has been sorted out finally, but it's been dodgy up there for about 8 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the electrification was a big issue. I mean, I know they've had some strikes from guards because of the new rolling stock they've got. He's built to operate without a guard, and that's something that's been in the on the cards for years. I mean, a new train doesn't, like, arrive tomorrow. It's designed years ago. It takes a lot of testing and a lot of construction before it hits the rail. And then some of the drivers, guards, think it's not suitable. Well, it's a little bit late on that.
Well, it is.
That's what we've got.
What's your role, Chris, as Rail Futures in all of this? I mean, are you a sort of a lobbying group? Do you talk to the train companies? Do you talk to the government? What do you do?
Yeah, we have particular contacts with anything from local authorities to the train operators and any government departments and anyone that's willing to sit down and talk seriously about the railway. I mean, as far as this is concerned, I know I've spoken to colleagues in Rail Future. We were rail advocates. We weren't there to bash the railway. For some time, we've been having meetings with rail operators about this new upcoming timetable. And we're saying to people, you know, it's really going to be good. We've got all these new destinations. We've got these new trains all being introduced. When it happens, it's going to be really good. Bear with it. And then to find out on the introduction of the timetable in May how bad it was, that they didn't have the trains and the drivers and things in the right place. But I've got a little local station I use regularly. Well, it was a half-hourly service regularly through the day, right through to 1 o'clock in the morning. Something you could rely on, you could get down to the station. It was handed over to GTR as part of the new timetable, and now it's just shut to pieces. It's not reliable. Half-hourly turns to hourly, and that's quite an impact for people.
Yeah.
You know, you get to a station, you expect a train, you've just missed one, you've only got a half hour to wait. But if you've got an hour, and you're not even sure after an hour whether that one's going to turn up,
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I've got my kids live down in Sussex, and I used to travel backwards and forwards to Sussex, you know, at the weekends or whenever I wasn't working, depending on what days of the week I was working. I actually gave up on the trains altogether and bought a car because it was so unreliable. You know, I couldn't guarantee to get the train.
That's the main aim of the rail industry. Yeah, we've got to get people out of the cars.
Yeah.
And out of the congested towns, cities, and London,
this is a main line out of it was out of London Bridge and Charing Cross down to Hastings, right? Which is a line that people should be using to go to the seaside at the weekends, but they don't bother. They put the kids in the car because, I guess what? It's also really, really expensive to travel with, say, four people on a train. You don't know if you're going to be able to sit together. Mm. You don't know if you'll even get a seat, and it costs you about £100.
Mm. Yeah, I did a travel up to York at the weekend, and one train got cancelled, so two trains were piled into one, and I did what they call a Jeremy Corbyn. I sat in the vestibule on the floor.
But did you call Channel 4 and get them to film it while you were doing
it? Yes,
exactly. No, I couldn't use my camera. But, yeah, I mean, it was that packed. There was people with wheelchairs, not buggies.
Yeah. I mean, the problem seems to be, Chris, as well. About at least now once a week, there's a sort of crisis at somewhere like Waterloo or London Bridge, overcrowding on the platforms because something has gone wrong. Now, two days ago, now, fair enough, it was because of something that happened at Clapham Junction. Somebody had fallen under a train and I think died. But the problem is, it seems to me that whenever anything small all goes wrong on the system, the whole system kind of comes grinds to a halt. There's no capacity, it seems to me, to build in sort of things that go wrong, because things will go wrong.
In a normal situation, and at the moment this timetable change is far from normal, there is always the trying to deal with disruption. When you're running so many trains right behind each other, what happens? You know, one gets delayed and then the next one's being delayed, and it will snowball back down the line very, very quickly, particularly at the peak. Mm. And you've got the alternative. You haven't got the alternative routes into London. And to be honest, you never will have. No one can afford to have ultimate, you know, redundancy that you can get around. Some people are very lucky where they live, where they sort of walk down the road and pick up a tube, or they pick up another line with only a few hundred yards walk. But that's not common. I mean, people have got to live with disruption, and the train operators know, and we've talked to them in the past about getting the right messages out to people. Yeah, I monitor the disruption, particularly in London, on a daily basis. I get an email about six times a day about what's gone wrong with signals, or unfortunately, sometimes it is people getting trapped under trains. It's people walking on the track, and they have to cut the power off until they can sort it all out. So there are many ways that disruption can happen.
What's the answer to this, Mel?
A lot of your listeners are going to say they actually have a really good journey into work every day. And it works. When it works, it's wonderful. It's when it doesn't. And
you is there an answer to this mess, though? Is there something that anyone can do and go, right, that's sorted it, that's solved the problem? Or is it just such a mess now that it's almost impossible?
Well, the focus is obviously getting this timetable right and getting the trains that are ordered running properly, the routes that are ordered right. I mean, there are so many things that had to come together to make it work, and it seems that almost at every point it didn't. It didn't work.
You'll hear a lot of voices now, Chris, not just coming from the Labour Party, but coming from other parts of society, saying maybe we should just go back to nationalisation and get rid of all these private profiteering companies which seem to be incapable of running their own trains and their own services. And the fact that, you know, the Network Rail people are a separate organisation that hold the tracks and fix the tracks up and all of that. Would we be better off with a renationalisation?
In this case, I'd say it would not make a lot of difference. It's what sometimes the rail industry call the controlling mind, somebody that's pulling it all together at the top. Now, that is government at the moment. I mean, it's almost as if the service had been nationalised. It's run from Department for Transport in almost all cases.
Right.
Network Rail's part of Department for Transport now. Effectively, it's an arm of government. Somebody has got to get to grips with the situation. The splitting up of different train operators having to work together. But, you probably have that in a proper nationalised industry as well. Even then, the rail industry was regional-based. And there were many things travelling across the region. I mean, there was a huge organisation running London and South East trains.
So you're saying pretty much it's kind of... Yeah, but if it was nationalised, you would feel as though somebody was going to be held responsible, which at the moment we don't really feel that any of the train bosses are they?
Who do you blame?
I agree with that, because a train operator is under almost micromanagement, and certainly they have a franchise agreement telling them exactly how they're going to run the railway. So flexibility of a train operator is a lot less than people think, and the profit they can make out of a franchise isn't really that much. I mean, it's small figure percentages at the most when things are working. So there's not much in the way of money, and there is a lot of control, and, well, there should be even more control, and you're right, there should be some accountability. Yeah.
So should Theresa May step in and sort it all out? Because she's good at things like this.
Keep her out of it, heaven's sake.
I was going to say, she's so good at sorting stuff out.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people in the rail industry would say that the last thing you want actually is politicians stamping all over you when you've got... problems. You want to get on with it. I mean, I don't know, people are in jobs and they end up with problem solving. One of the most annoying bits is you're getting cracking trying to sort out the problem, and suddenly someone calls you to a summit meeting that takes an hour and a half out of it when you should be fixing the problem. So
that is true. Listen, Chris, we've got to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. Chris Fribbins there from Rail Futures.